most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. Our show is broadcast every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, our show will help you to question your career reality. This show is for you if you were, are, or might be considering a career in the entertainment industry. Our guests provide tips, advice, and resource information on what it takes and how you can successfully pursue a career in show business. Our guests work in various professions of entertainment, so that means that we will definitely have someone on the show sooner or later from a career that you are interested. You just have to listen every single week for the rest of your life, and sooner or later somebody you like that, Paul? That's right. I lock them in right away. I start hypnotizing them right away. Oh, God. And then when I find out who they're interested in, I put somebody else on, and then they have to listen next week. No, I don't do that. Not really. Now, if you want to check out our past guests, read their bios, and listen to their interview instantly or download one of the shows, go to the LA Talk Radio website. That's latalkradio.com. I'll give you a clue. If you're listening to us live now, you're already there. So click on the link at the top of the website that says Channel 1, scroll down and look for the graphic of our show, Question Reality, and click the link. And this will take you directly to our archive page. And there you can view a list of all of our past guests. And we have some really, really interesting guests. So you want to check out all of them. Our show has been on since 2008, so we have a wide variety of people to listen to. Our shows are also available for download on iTunes under the podcast section. So you just type in Question Reality Radio in the search box, and there you go, every single show right there. If you want to find out about our future guests, we are booked 3 to 6 months in advance, so I just want to put it out there. We're almost finished booking for the year, but we do have some time slots available. So if you are a professional working in entertainment and you can help our audience by giving career advice, then we definitely want to hear from you. Email me, PriscillaLeone@yahoo.com, and we will talk. We'll talk and see if you can come on. Paul, I love you. You're like my favorite guest ever. You laugh at everything.
You're very entertaining.
Thank you so much. I'm going to put out my little tip jar and send it over to Oregon where you are. Now, if you want to find out about our future guests, visit the official Question Reality website. We have an official one, and that will show you all the guests that are listed up until, I think we're booked now up until October. Yeah, almost November now. So that address is questionrealityshow.com, questionrealityshow.com. Now, as always, every single week, or I wouldn't be doing the show, we have a fantastic, spectacular, stimulating, riveting guest, and I give you the most riveting today. His name is Paul Bright, and how could he not be riveting with a name like Paul Bright? He has to perform for that name, for sure. He is a director. Actor. He is a producer. He's a writer and an actor. He does it all. He is all. And right now, he is in Oregon. And he's there with his cat and two goldfish, I assume. But we're going to talk about the cat and goldfish later, which is exactly what we have over here. So we've already got something in common. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about Paul. Paul Bright's true passion has always been in the performing arts. So we knew at a young age, going to say we. I didn't know him when he was young, but we knew he was going to be in the arts and be an entertainer. He was the founding artistic director of the Gaslight Theater near Austin, Texas, and now he works on a global stage by writing and directing and producing feature films. Now, as a filmmaker, his films cross genres, and they combine quirky satire with action-adventure, science fiction with heartfelt drama, and political thrillers with comedy. This guy is a wacky, crazy guy mixing that stuff up. And what Paul does that I find is absolutely just wonderful is he mentors independent filmmakers across the country, and he helps them to produce their own feature films. Who doesn't need that? I'm actually going to hire him after I get off the phone, because God, do I need help on my damn short feature films. I got people harassing me. I've already collected donation money, and they're like, where the hell is the film? I'm like, oh, God.
I'm here for you, Priscilla. I'm here for you.
Well, say no more. If you need help doing your independent film, Paul Bright is going to tell us what he does, how he does it, and how he can help you do it too. So I want to tell you how I came across Paul real quick. He was referred to me by this lovely, hot, sexy, by the way, gentleman named Stephen Lucen. And Stephen Lucen is the CEO and president of the PR firm called Intercontinental Style, and they're based out of New York. So you might want to check them out, intercontinentalstyle.com. And he is so nice, and he's kind, and he's very intelligent. And if you need help with your PR, he is the guy to go to. So he emailed me, and he said, I know this really fantastic guy named Paul Bright. He is brilliant, and I would love for him to be on your show. And I said, well, say no more. And there you go. That's how Paul got on the show. So today, Paul hopefully is going to help us with many of our problems, one of the biggest problems that we're facing today, which are independent filmmakers actually getting a film made. So we're going to find out what he feels are the biggest problems facing independent filmmakers today, and also how do you constantly keep getting funding for your independent films. We want to know all the tips, and how do you maintain focus on being a filmmaker when you are also an actor, which a lot of people do. They're actors and they're not getting cast, so you say, well, what the hell, I'm just going to produce my own shit, which is what I recommend. Men, just produce your own shit, okay? But we need to know how to.
That's exactly right.
So, yeah, that's what we're gonna do. Now, Paul, I want to say welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm having a great time already.
Well, are you having a little cocktail in Oregon?
No, actually, I've got a big fat bowl of ice cream here. It's a blackberry cobbler.
Oh. God, you just gave me chills. I'm titillated over here. I definitely love my sweets, so I can relate to that. Now, you told me you're in Oregon. I said, oh, I thought that you lived in New York. And what did Paul Bright tell me? He said, oh, well, we have, I'm in Oregon right now, which told me that he's bi-coastal. So I told him, I know the first person I'm going to hit up for a donation for my next film. So you probably don't want to tell people that you're actually what is it called? You have, what is that? It's a Pierre de Tet, or what is that called when you have like a little summer home? Is that what it's called?
No.
You know what? You know that little fancy French word they use, right? Is that what you're at, your Pierre de Tet or whatever that is?
Well, it's not quite like that. I have an apartment that I live with a significant other with in New York. And I also have another significant other who lives here in Oregon.
Hold everything. Did I just hear you say you had two significant others? Not one, but two different ones?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Holy shit, you're living the life, Paul. You're living the life, my darling. You have to tell me your secrets. How do you keep them apart? Well, I guess one's in Oregon, one's in New York. My God.
Well, they know each other. I mean, you know, everybody knows each other. That's okay.
Wow, I love it already. This is my type of man, people. Do you see this? Even Lucin Newt sent me Paul Bright, because I am loving this guy already. All right, let's move on, because I'm already titillated by you too much. Now, let's talk
about... Okay, so wait. Let me just tell you. I mean, I was living in Texas for 20 years. I grew up in L.A. Yeah. I was an actor in L.A. I was discovered, and I was represented by Cunningham. And when I was a teenager, I was making a whole lot of TV commercials. And it was paying all my bills. I made more money than my dad did.
You know what, Paul? I got all those questions laid out, and I'm going to get to them, but I like to do them in order. Do you think I could run them by you? We're going to cover them.
Okay.
We're going to
fine, fine, do that way.
I got 17 questions for you. So we're going to roll them out right now, but I like to start with the question. The theme of my show is I always start with the question because people like to know this. They like to know. Now, I do know that your entertainment career, as you said, began when you were 16 and you started appearing in TV commercials and shows and films. Now, is that what you saw yourself doing as a career when you were a child? Let's start from there.
Yes, it is. And then when I was 23, I was being cast as a nerd, by the way. And this was during the time of the movie Revenge of the Nerds and so forth. I was not in that film, but I was being cast as those parts. And when I turned 23, people who were 23 were now starting to be cast as young fathers. And I did not look like a young father. So I was not getting cast anymore when I was 23. And I realized that even though my goal all along for the 7 years that I'd been a union actor was that I was there for the long haul, and I always thought of myself as being a supporting character actor, and I'd be in this career until I was in my 80s, the career was fizzling out because I no longer fit the roles that were being written for people my age.
Well, when you started at 16 and you started appearing in TV commercials and shows and films, what are some of the commercials? What are some of the shows? What are some of the films?
The only film that you would see these days is a movie called Mickey and Maude, which was starring Dudley Moore and Anne Reicking. I've got a cameo part in there. You wouldn't recognize me because I don't look like that at all anymore. I was on a TV show with Lonnie Anderson called Easy Street. I was on Divorce Court. Mm-hmm. I made a buttload of commercials for all sorts of national products, which I don't feel the need to plug right now because they're making plenty of money on their own.
Right.
And so the deal of it is that I was 23 and I was really not happy with my life in LA because I wasn't doing what I wanted to do. The problem with being an actor is that you're waiting around for somebody else to write a part for you that you can audition for, and then maybe you'll get selected, and you have no control really over whether or not they ultimately choose you. You can go on and do your best possible presentation and audition, but it still isn't your choice. I mean, I got cast for a commercial. I couldn't figure out why they had hired me because suddenly I was playing a jock and they'd hired some other guy to play the geeky nerd. And I was thinking, but this is wrong. I always play the geeky nerd. Why am I the jock? And during lunch on this shoot, the wife of the ad executive comes up to me and she says, you know, you remind me so much of my husband when he was in college. And I realized that's why I was hired. I was hired because I remind them of the ad exec.
Wow.
That had nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. That's still going on today. Now, when you first started at 16 years old, did you get an agent? Were your parents supportive of your desire in the entertainment business when you told them the news as a child? And is that how you got started? They went and took you to get an agent, et cetera, et cetera. How did you break in?
No, I was, this never happens. I was discovered. I was in high school, and I was in the High School Musical, and an agency from Cunningham, which is now Cunningham, Escott, something, and Bettini, I don't know what it is, DSD, they were opening up a new division for teenagers, and the agent saw me on stage, called me in for a meeting, and I thought this was a scam, because no agent is ever going to come to a high school to find actors. And so I was really, really suspicious of this, and we didn't know anyone in the business. My dad had this distant friend named Marla Adams, who was a soap opera queen a long time ago. And he called her up and said, listen, have you ever heard of this agency? At that time, it was just called Cunningham Agency. And she said, yes, they're one of the top three. So at that point, my parents were accepting that I would go ahead and do it. But they didn't want me to deter from my education. They assumed that I'd be a career track going straight into UCLA for 4 years and then probably going on to graduate school. And my mother was adamantly opposed to me pursuing acting while I was in high school. She didn't stop it, but she did not support it at all.
Did that cause a lot of friction in the household? And if so, how did you deal with it?
Well, there was a lot of friction in the household, for sure. a lot of friction, like I tell you.
Well, as children or young adults who listen to the show, because I do have a young adult audience, and they often ask questions, and I get emails from people, especially in the Midwest and in the southern states, who from people from small towns who want to pursue a career, and they say that they are just constantly harassed and taunted and punished, and it's just not acceptable in their household. So any tips or any advice that you would give our audience of how you handled it to continue into that career and how you dealt with your parents would be really good advice.
Yeah, I kept in mind the fact that I wasn't going to live in that house forever, but this is a temporary thing. You know, all that I had to do was get through the next 6 months or the next year.
Okay.
Because I knew that there would come a point where I was going to get out and I could do whatever the hell I wanted to do. And so it was a matter of making compromises with my parents, making agreements, and trying to convince them to see that this wasn't an active, a positive, possible career for me. Now, both of my parents are very educated. They're career professionals in their fields. And acting was something completely and totally foreign from them. Totally foreign. And acting is not a solid, steady career. And so, of course, my parents were always talking to me about get a backup career. You know, you want to go to college and have a backup career. But look, I dropped out of UCLA. I went to UCLA, and after a couple of years, I was starting, my GPA was suffering because I was going to auditions. I wasn't in class. So I dropped college altogether, and I never have gotten my bachelor's degree because at that time I had a very viable career. I didn't see a reason to get the education at that time in my life. So
now,
I didn't.
Now, you describe yourself as a Renaissance man because of your work in diverse fields. You worked as a freight railroad conductor, airline employee,
right.
Organic farmer,
right.
School teacher, bus
right.
driver, construction
right.
worker,
right.
and community
yep.
outreach director for a historical nonprofit organization. What was your favorite
yep.
job and why?
Believe it or not, well, I was a front desk receptionist for 2 years for an internet service provider company, and no one ever called, and no one ever walked in the door. But we had excellent internet access right there at the front desk.
What?
And during the time that I was working for this company, I was online running another business, and I was getting paid by the company that I was working for. So that has been my all-time favorite employer ever.
Of course, I can see why. Now, when you worked all these other jobs, was this because you had made a decision and you and your parents decided maybe, you know, to part ways and you just went and got all these different jobs to support yourself and you just went from job to job, or why so many jobs?
Well, when I left at 23, I left LA and I was really frustrated with the industry because actors have very, very little control about whether or not they work. They have a lot of control about how they present themselves and the workshops and classes that we take, but we don't ultimately hire ourselves to do the job. And so I was trying to find another way to do something else in my life that I would feel as much passion about as I do about performance and about creating motion media. And so that's why I tried a whole lot of different fields. And there were, you know, some jobs were better than others. And there are things that I learned from every job. And some jobs were close to satisfying, but none of them have ever ultimately actually satisfied. So I've been back in New York for 2 years, and I am back there as an actor and also continuing on with my independent film work as a director, writer, producer kind of guy. And I have had the best time in New York in the last 2 years. It has been a total dream come true. I'm doing exactly what I love doing because I'm getting to audition several times a week, and the auditions are going very well, and I've been getting cast. And I went through this period when I was in New York this winter where I was literally on set 3 days a week. And that is extraordinary. Very, very few actors get this tremendous experience and get the pleasure of doing what they love to do all the time.
What Well, I think that the experience that you had in all of these different jobs, I mean, you definitely would be able to do a scene and really relate if you were a freight railroad conductor. I mean, come on. There you go. You already I think it's great that actors should go out and have as many different jobs as they can possibly get, because if they know they want to be an actor and it's in your heart and soul, you really know that no other job is going to take that place. So you might as well go out there and work as many jobs as possible. Now, let me ask you, Paul, we all know that basic jobs, the basic jobs that actors take on to supplement their income while pursuing their career, such as they do waitress, bartender, barista, nanny. But let me ask you, what types of jobs can you think of other than those typical jobs can you do as an actor or a filmmaker to supplement your income?
There are a lot of actors I've known who've gone into real estate. Real estate was great until the real estate market tanked. So that's not really such a great viable option now. There are a lot of jobs that you can do by working at home and running your own business on the internet. There are a lot of people who need people to build websites for them or to maintain and update websites. There are people who need graphic designers. There are people who need copywriters. People who will the company hires you freelance to write up a press release for an event that's going to be coming up with some company in a week or 2 weeks. And so you write this press release and you get paid for it. Being a publicist is another excellent job, because the role of an actor is really social media and being a publicist. Acting and filmmaking is all about social media now, more than anything. And so you can do the same exact skills that you learn by working on Facebook and Twitter and so forth, and you can turn that into being a publicist for yourself or a publicist working for other companies. So my strongest recommendation really is that you go into business for yourself. One business as an actor and another business as an internet or online consultant of some sort.
I love that. That is a brilliant tip. I couldn't have said it better. The waitress, bartender, barista, nanny, yes, that's great. But absolutely what Paul is saying, you'll get much more satisfaction. And hey, you're dealing with these people, you never know. You have to ask for a donation for your film. They're the perfect person to donate. Now, Paul, what do you feel are 3 to 5 characteristic traits that it takes to make a successful filmmaker? I'm sorry, actor.
And a successful actor, number one, and what's most important, is that you really have to feel very confident and positive about yourself. Acting is extremely introspective, and every time you perform, a lot of actors who are not extremely experienced are wondering what people are thinking of them or judging and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I've now gotten to this point in my age. I'm 47. I'm just telling you now, I'm an old fart. But at the age of 47, I finally know I am exactly who I am. I am not going to be somebody else. When I go into that audition, they either want me or they don't. And that's beyond my control. And so having this sense every time I go into an audition, whatever the audition is for, going, hey, here I am. This is me. I can do this part, or you can hire somebody else. Whatever.
Yeah, initially they do cast you from a headshot. So thank God if the people still look like that by the time they get to the audition, which is one of the things, a lot of people change their hair and they do all kinds of weird things, get a piercing, and then you don't look like your headshot. So if you don't get the part, it's your fault. But when they get rejected, they just take it so personally. How would you recommend that an actor not take rejection personally? Because you're going to get rejected 90% of the time. How do you handle it, Paul?
So the way that I learned about that is by being on the other side of the camera as a film director and by running casting processes myself. And the reason why I learned about that is because there are many actors come and audition for me for movies that I'm shooting. And certainly a lot of the actors that I read are very capable, competent, good actors, have a good look. But there's only one or two possible actors that I might have met auditioning for a specific role who is really right for that part. And by being right, I mean they have the correct looks that match with the other people who I'm definitely going to cast in other roles that revolve around that character or that that character interacts with. They're the correct height. They're the correct look. They have the right kind of accent. They have the right kind of character. They have the right emotional character and personality that I feel comfortable working with, even. Has nothing to do with their acting. Do I feel comfortable spending the next 2 weeks or 4 weeks with this person, 10 hours a day? And those are qualities that the actor has extremely little control over at all, because personalities sometimes match and sometimes they don't. You could be the nicest, sweetest person in the world, but that doesn't mean that all the nice, sweet people in the world are going to get along with each other. We won't.
Well, Paul, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. I want to interject right here and have you tell me, is there such a thing called set etiquette? When you go on an audition, you need to be practicing the set etiquette. So is it possible that one could be an expert at giving you set etiquette and you cast them and then you find out that that person is nothing like who they were before? And have you come across that? And if so, what do you do as a filmmaker?
I have come across that, and I want to be really careful here because I don't want to insult any of the cast members who might have worked for me recently in a feature film that releases in 3 weeks.
Love that. Go ahead.
However, the reality is that sometimes when you're meeting an actor in an audition, even you go through a callback and you may even go through another meeting or two with the actor before you're finally working together. The personality that you see in the audition may not actually be close to the personality of who that person really turns out to be, and you get to really see who that person is on set.
Exactly.
And the problem with that is it meant that shooting on the set with a person who was very different from what I was expecting meant that the chemistry of the set was very difficult to handle. It's very stressful. I thought that we were kind of matching up in our characteristic styles and just our general attitudes, our general energy levels were somewhere around the same area.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we're not. And it's happened more than once on more than one film. And I mean, the crew
wants to kill me
when I bring in an actor who doesn't match with what the crew is accustomed to working with in my style. And I got to tell you, I work almost always with the exact same crew when I shoot my films.
Yeah.
We all work together very well because we understand each other and we have matching personalities, although we're very different people. But, I mean, our personalities jive together with each other. And occasionally I will cast an actor who just totally and completely doesn't fit in. And there are moments when my crew wants to kill that person.
Yeah. Right.
And so all I can do is turn to the crew and say, yes, I know. I'm really sorry. I had no idea.
Here's the situation. Because they're an actor. They're an actor, and they did the acting in the casting.
We can fire this person now, but we'll have to go back and find somebody else and reshoot, or we can just, you know, tough it out and shoot the movie.
And then just
now, so far, I've not fired an actor when I've been in production yet to this date. After 6 movies, I've never fired someone once the camera started rolling.
Okay, so the 3 characteristic traits that you feel to be a successful actor are, 1.
Confidence in yourself that you're a good person.
2.
Open to let other people know who you are. Don't need to hide anything.
3.
Acceptance that the world is a big place and there's more than one place for you to fit in.
Let me throw a trick question at you. How do you know that acting is not for you? Have you ever run across, God bless them, people who have been trying and trying and trying and trying and trying? And I'm not one to say ever give up, but when your house has been foreclosed or you've got Dog the Bounty Hunter running after your ass, is it time to say maybe I should try another career field? I hate to be the devil's advocate, but when do you feel that you may realize acting's not for you? either because you didn't take classes, you don't want to prepare, you don't want to do any of the things that you should do. You just want to go to keep going to castings and casting and casting, and you don't get cast. Well, when is it time to move on? Or should
I'm going to throw a trick answer at you.
Woo!
Ready?
Yeah.
Potentially, everyone could be cast for something. So the problem is that that actor who's not getting cast is not correctly presenting who they are and making themselves castable. So this is something that I learned in New York and when I got there 2 years ago, and I learned this very fast and it worked extraordinarily well for me. I realized that the roles that I'm going to be cast for very, very specific parts: lawyer, doctor, therapist, scientist, architect, and that's it. And I only audition for those specific roles. Only. I do not waste my time with anything else because I'm not that type. I wear only clothes that very specifically support the look. Every audition I go to, I am wearing a suit. I keep my hair combed and cut in the exact same look every single solitary audition I go to. It matches my headshot. My speech matches exactly the way that I'm supposed to present myself. I get cast often as a therapist because I sound very much like an educated, erudite sort of man, very well educated and informed, even though I don't actually have that college degree.
Right.
But that's the way that I come across.
Right.
So if I want to be casting myself in leading man roles as, you know, the hunky hero or as the secret spy or as the FBI agent or any of these other parts, hello, of course I'm not going to cast. No one's going to cast me in those parts. I don't look that way. I don't act that way. I don't move that way. So the problem is that the actor needs to be matching up his or her look, his motions, his speech. All of that together has to be one package so that when they walk in the door for that audition, and I'm auditioning somebody to be the school teacher, immediately when he walks in the door, I'm like, he's it, right there. That's the school teacher.
That
now let's see what he sounds like when he opens his mouth.
That is called knowing your brand, and that also starts at the very beginning when you get your headshots, okay? So you definitely need to know your brand because I tell you, go to some of the photographers and they say, okay, bring four looks, and you go there with four looks, you know, there's a problem.
Yeah, because nobody's told them what their brand is, and it's really hard for us to judge ourselves to figure out what our brand is. So you need consultants. You need people to give you honest, good feedback saying, this is what I see you as. I see you as this, this, or this.
Yeah. I mean, how many times have we seen actors come in that want to be the principal, but you just know that they're not. They're the co-star or they're the supporting actor, but everybody wants to be the lead. So, well, not everybody. There are people who are very happy with
the co-star. I
mean, I
want to be that supporting character.
I think the best part is the comic relief. That's my favorite part. I love character parts. I love anything that's character. I wouldn't want to be the lead personally. I've never even had any interest in that. It's just not my thing. But I think the character-driven parts are really the most fun and the best. So I love
those. But see, Priscilla, this is a good match for you because you're a very character, very spirited person. Your natural personality is someone who would be the character. You would be the best friend. You would be the quirky neighbor. Those are the kinds of roles you'd play. Somebody who plays a leading female role as the romantic ingenue, she's going to be probably a much more subdued, very nuanced, very subtle and underspoken person in real life.
Right, right.
Really?
There are people that very, very few that, I mean, everybody has their own taste, Paul, but there are very few actors that can do the crossover, who can do the drama the best, and then switch over and do the comedy. I have seen it with several actors, but it's a very hard thing to do. So you can start as an actor by just knowing your brand, and then as your acting skills grow, maybe you'll want to try something else. If it doesn't work, believe me, you'll know it because you won't be getting cast in it. Now, Paul, let's switch over now to the filmmaking aspect. Let's say a lot of actors are up because for whatever reason, they're not being cast in things. So they do the smart thing and they start producing their own films via writing, producing, et cetera, et cetera. How do you maintain focus on being a filmmaker when you're also an actor?
It's two different worlds. It's two completely different jobs. It's sort of like what I was talking about earlier about having another job where you're working, say, as a publicist.
Yeah.
And that's your internet job. So the acting job is one career, and the job as a writer, director, producer is another career. And so it's two completely separate worlds. The only time when those worlds match up is when I'm in front of the camera on the film set that is a movie that I'm writing, directing, producing.
Right.
That's the only time there's crossover at all.
Right, right. Yeah, I have lots of friends who are actors, and they said, you know, I'm not sitting around waiting. I'm going to just write my own roles, and I will find funding, and I will produce. And I'm working with several people right now who are doing exactly that. And I
Very good for them. Very smart.
Yeah, and I love that because they're pioneering their little way right into the business, however they can, and I am all for that. But I would think that, and I've experienced that, it is very hard. So without me telling them, I wanted someone like you who is doing it to tell an actor, if this is what you want to do, what should you say? For example, what do you feel the main focus should be when you are the actor that wrote the part for yourself and then you have to become the producer and the actor on your own film?
Well, you do a switch because you're no longer thinking about it as this is a film just for me to be an actor in, because that's not what you're selling anymore. If you're going to be writing the film, really the whole point behind telling a story is telling a story that other people want to learn, hear from, experience. And so that's the reason to make a movie in the first place. So you do the switch. You forget about the fact that you're going to be in the film. That's incidental. That has nothing to do with now why you're making the movie. Instead, the only reason why you're going to be making this movie and successfully be able to raise the money that you need to raise in order to make this movie is because you're telling a film story that is important to people, that people care about. And so it's a completely different world. You have to put that actor's ego and that desire to be in front of the camera or on the big silver screen away. Just tuck that away, and you get to play as an actor for a little while when you film the movie. But the rest of the time, your real focus is on telling a story.
Right. That's true. Now, what after you do this, you write your little story, you write your part, you're ready to.
My little
you're ready
shit.
To, and
yes.
Not you, but I mean people in general. I say little for everything. People constantly say, will you stop calling everything little? I don't know. It might be some psychological defect. Okay, so you write your film and you are ready. You're like, woo, this is the best. Now I just need some moolah. I need some dough. How do you get funding for independent films?
Yeah, it's totally changed from the way that things used to be. The way that I funded the last two films almost predominantly has been through a online social media campaign going through Indiegogo.com. And actually, I've been sponsored by an organization that's a national organization, though they're based in New York, called FracturedAtlas.org. FracturedAtlas.org, you apply to them for them to take you underneath their umbrella to sponsor your film as a project. They are not judging the quality of the film. They are not judging the artistic merit of the film. They're just judging whether or not, in fact, you're doing an art kind of project. If you're going to make a slasher film, they may not be so keen on sponsoring you. However, the deal is that when they do sponsor you, then all the money that you raise as donations becomes tax deductible as allowed by laws in the states where people live. So this is a good benefit for the people who have some decent amount of income to be able to donate to you, because if they're going to give you several thousand dollars or more, then they want to be able to get this from their taxes so that come next April, they see that they didn't waste the money that they gave to you. Not only did they help you, but they also reduced the amount of money that they were giving to the federal government. So, and in essence, they didn't really lose anything by donating to you. So that's why I highly recommend that people go under the umbrella of Fractured Atlas or some of the other arts organizations that sponsor filmmakers, and then do your social media campaign through Indiegogo. Now, the whole deal with the social media campaign means that you must have Facebook, Twitter, you must have a YouTube account, you must be very, very versatile and often, frequently spending a lot of time interacting with people that you're meeting online. I have 2,500 friends on my Facebook account. I don't know all of them personally, but I'm working around trying to get to know them all. And I got to tell you, even right now where we're talking, so I'm on my Facebook account now, and I see that there are some good friends of mine who I know through the internet who are trying to reach you and trying to call in.
Ronan, do you hear this? Where are these people that are trying to call in? Have you gotten any calls? Ronan? Hello? Hello? Ronan, are you there? Oh, I think he's left us. Ronan? Oh, are we getting any calls in? Hello? Oh, gee.
Yeah,
okay,
well
that might be why we're not getting any calls. We're supposed to have somebody looking at the screen to see if the calls are coming in, and I guess Ronan has stepped away. Where's my Ronan? Ronan, will you ever come back? Hello, Ronan. Oh, let me try to send him a little text message. I apologize about that, Paul. I don't know where Ronan is, but tell him to keep trying because we still have time. We've got 9 more minutes, so hopefully Ronan will come back and we'll get that in. Now we've lost our train of thought. I don't know where the hell we were.
That's okay. So while we're here, I'm just going to say hello to Jake, and I want to say hello to Aaron and Amos and to Carl and to, let's see, Richard. These are just a number of the folks who are trying to get through right now. Hi, guys. It's great to hear from you.
Hi, guys. Now, my question is, are you calling the right number? You should be calling area code 323-203-0815. We're on channel 1, not channel 2. 323-203-0815.
That's the number I gave them.
Wow, I just don't. Oh, I'm here all the time. Ronan says he's there. Ronan, have we gotten any calls in? Because people are saying that they are calling in, but I just don't see them. But I could. He says he said he's been texting me on the other window that you do not have callers, but you didn't see the messages. Oh my God! So it's my fault again. I don't know. Honestly, Paul, I don't know how to work this damn Skype. I'm gonna be honest with you. People try to call in all the time. I don't know what I'm doing over here. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. If I'm supposed to hit a button or what I'm supposed to do. Ronan says, do you want to take it? Yes, let's take all calls until we exit the show. So if it comes in, just come on the line, Ronan, and say, I've got a caller. Oh, hello? Hi, is there someone?
Hello.
Oh, we're running a professional operation over here, as you can tell. My God.
I can tell. I'm trying to turn down my speakers now so that I can hear y'all.
Down or you won't hear a damn thing. Oh my gosh.
It sounds like Jake. Is this Jake?
Yeah, Paul, it sure is.
Hey, Jake. Let me tell everybody. This is Jake Adolf from Jake Medic, and Jake is also a filmmaker. He's based in San Antonio. Jake, how many films have you made now, man?
I've been producer on like 17 films so far, or executive producer, and then I've been assistant director on a couple. And then I've worked with you on a couple. I don't know what it was for you. I'm probably the one that crew was on the kill. But the next premiere, when we premiere Goliad Uprising, I will let the crew have each one of them take a shot at me.
All right, great. See, I mean, here's a great thing about Jake. This is an excellent example. So Jake works as a producer, executive producer. He's a director and writer and so forth. But he's also an actor. And he's been an actor in my film. And it's kind of this sense of community of people helping each other out and working. And the great thing that I know when I work with Jake is that I know Jake knows his stuff, and I know that Jake will be easy to work with, a breeze and a joy. And so I have no questions whatsoever about working with Jake. And what I've encountered with the people that I've auditioned for in New York is they find out I'm a filmmaker, and in so many ways they're relieved because they have the sense that I know how to handle myself on a set, and we'll have a nice, pleasant day together. Right?
Well, right. It sounds like... like a Spielberg Tom Hanks situation going on. You know how Spielberg always casts Tom Hanks practically in every movie he's in. So it sounds like you two are Hanks and Spielberg on the situation. Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much, Jake, for calling in. We've got 5 minutes, and I do want to get back to Paul. We want to talk. We got a couple things to talk about. We want to talk about his new film, and we want to talk about things that are coming up. But I highly recommend that you call the next time Paul comes back, because he doesn't know this yet, but I'm going to ask him to come back in the beginning of the year to talk some more. So you're going to have to call in again, and this time we won't miss your call, okay?
It sounds good. Okay, so the film that I have releasing in 3 weeks, Jake was very instrumental in making the film. Also, there's another actor who's been trying to call in. The lead of the film is Aaron Weisinger. Aaron was extraordinary in this movie, and the film is called Goliad Uprising.
Yes!
It releases nationwide on June 22nd, and it's spelled G-O-L-I-A-D, Uprising, Goliad Uprising. It's a near-future sci-fi film. It's about a corporation that has figured out a way to brainwash people, and they're brainwashing them in order to take control of the government and to influence the decisions that our governments are making.
Paul, we need that right now. I hope that this film inspires us to actually do it. This is what we need. Go ahead.
Well, the reason why I wrote this film is because so much of our mass media is influencing the way that people think. And yet people aren't questioning what they're seeing. They're just accepting everything that they see being produced without, you know, balancing it out and looking at different perspectives. And so I wrote this film as sort of a challenge to people to really start analyzing where the information is coming from and what is being told to them. And, you know, looking at their lives and saying, does this make sense? Does this make sense? Should I believe everything that I'm being told? Anyway, the film also stars Shannon Lark, and Shannon Lark is the director of the Viscera Film Festival, which is the Women's Horror Film Festival, and she is extraordinary in this movie. I mean, she is just sensational, and she is a Fangoria scream queen, but her fans won't recognize her in this movie because she's not kind of the ditz that she often has played in horror films. She is incredibly brilliant in this movie, and it was wonderful working with her. I had a blast.
What is her name again? I did not catch her name.
Shannon Lark, L-A-R-K.
Shannon Lark, L-A-R-K. You're going to have to ask Shannon Lark if she wants to come on the show. And I would love to have. Oh, my God. Will you hook me up or what, Paul?
Yes, absolutely, Priscilla.
Right.
Of course I will.
And apologize that anyone who tried to get through, please apologize, because it is totally my fault, because I don't know how to run Skype. I know that Ronan was trying to get people through. It's me. Because when I'm on one screen talking to you, I'm not on the other screen. So I would love for you to come back if you're available, maybe in January or February. And
Absolutely.
Would you come back? And then we're going to cover a whole bunch of more stuff, and hopefully we can talk about more films. But we want to make sure that we get this in real quick. I know that you mentor other indie filmmakers, you run seminars across the country, and you also have online tutorials to teach people how to plan and run a smooth film set, which I think it's a brilliant idea. And this information is so helpful to young kids and people who live in small towns who may not be able to afford film score, know exactly how to get started. So please tell the audience, you got 2 minutes, please tell the audience a little something about how it works and what one can hope to achieve with your online courses and how we can find you.
Sure. The website is www.brightfilmmaking.com. brightfilmmaking.com. There's 4 hours of tutorials in there, and I break down all of the steps that you need in order to produce, basically write and film your independent feature film. And I talk a lot about how to market the film and how to target your audience and also how to raise funds, how to raise the donations that you need in order to make this movie. The reason why I did this is because I haven't seen any place else that actually gives you the nuts and bolts, how to do it step by step by step. I see a lot of people talk about theory and blah, 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 and comparing it to these large Hollywood budgets, but that's not the world that independent filmmakers are in. And so the filmmaker website, brightfilmmaking.com, is really for all of us independent filmmakers out there to have a nice, smooth, well-run set where everybody's happy and you get the movie made that you want to make.
My God, who isn't going to go to brightfilmmaking.com? BRIGHTFILMMAKING.com. Check it out. It'll help you if you need to make your film. I'm going to go there as soon as I get off the line. Also, check out
his
film, Goliad Uprising, GOLIADUPRISING.com. We love you, Paul. We beg you to come back on. I'm going to be contacting you in the beginning of the year. You've already committed to me online, so now you got to come
back. Of course.
And I want you to line all the people up that didn't get through. Please apologize for me, and I want them all to call in, and maybe if you're in LA, you can come into the radio station and we can do it there. But definitely let's have them all call. We're going to have like a party, but everybody's got to have a cocktail in their hand when they call. That's my rule. Okay. Thank you so much, Paul. Thank you, everybody who called in, Jake only, and everybody who tried. We're going to go now, but we will see you next week. We're going to have Paul come on next year. Paul Bright, director, producer, writer, actor. Check it out, brightfilmmaking.com. Say goodbye to your friends and fans, Paul.
Thank you so much, Priscilla. I'm so glad to have been here. Thank you.
Thank you, sweetie. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Goodbye.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona. Only on LA Talk Radio.